Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Elizabeth Wydra, the president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank, law firm, and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Wydra.
Great to be with you, Ian.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. And there was a very sunny, a lovely spring day in Washington in the Rose Garden today, where Justice Gorsuch was sworn in by his mentor, the Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. And President Trump, of course, was beaming there, almost like a proud father. He couldn't help resisting taking credit or talking, making the conversation about him, by saying, I got it done in the first 100 days. You think that's easy? But in general, there was no irony there about from all of them, praising Senator McConnell as Gorsuch did and everybody else who helped him and all the people who got him there. There was no mention of how he got there at the expense of Justice Garland.
Yes, it certainly reminded me on this sunny spring day of another sunny, lovely day in the Rose Garden, which I happened to have the honor of being there for, and that was when President Obama announced his nomination of Chief Judge Merrick Garland for this very seat that Justice Gorsuch just took today. And I think that it's impossible to talk about this confirmation without recognizing that context, because it makes the Supreme Court a political issue in a way that it really hasn't been before, because right now we're talking about a Republican Senate that broke the rules in order to get this extremely conservative nominee through after Senator McConnell refused to consider for nearly a year the nomination of President Obama's Supreme Court nominee. So I think it's impossible to exclude Merrick Garland from this history, even though the White House, Justice Gorsuch, and the Senate Republicans have certainly tried their best to have amnesia about the months and months and months that Merrick Garland's nomination languished in the Senate.
So do you think in any way that Associate Justice of the Supreme Court now, Neil Gorsuch, feels any sense of disquiet or even shame? I mean, not only is he in a stolen seat, and he got there at the expense of Merrick Garland, to get there, the United States Senate had to blow up. And many, many senators felt that crossing the line, as Mitch McConnell did with the nuclear option, was something that they would rue, and many lamented that the Senate had become something that was almost unrecognizable. So a lot of damage done, and do you think this man in any way recognizes that he's the beneficiary at a great cost?
I don't know what he personally thinks about it. You know, at his hearings, he certainly seemed to, in private meetings beforehand, apparently recognized that Judge Garland is a well-respected person, and expressed some regret for the way he was treated. But I don't think he regrets the fact that now Gorsuch himself gets the seat. I think one person that we should be thinking about how he feels about all this is Chief Justice John Roberts, who has said repeatedly that he doesn't like the impression that the justices on the court are Democrats or Republicans. He has said that he doesn't want the American people to think of the court that way, as a political body, just like Congress or the president. But this process certainly does make the Supreme Court seem much more like a political body, just like Congress or the White House. And so I think Chief Justice Roberts, while he, as a conservative, is probably happy to have Justice Gorsuch, another conservative, on the bench, he should be very upset by the way that this process, and Mitch McConnell more than anyone else, has injected politics into this. I think another way that Chief Justice Roberts should not be happy with how this has gone is the fact that Donald Trump, and he talked today about how he, you know, did this within the first 100 days, well, he made a lot of campaign promises about the Supreme Court, and he explicitly had litmus tests for the kind of justice that he promised his supporters he would put on the bench. And that's something that while Gorsuch himself at his hearings tried to say that he wasn't proposed these litmus tests explicitly by Donald Trump himself, clearly in the process to select a nominee whose name got on the list, one can only assume that they looked at these particular tests. And those, as stated by Donald Trump, were someone who would automatically, in Donald Trump's words, overturn Roe versus Wade, the right to choose an abortion, someone who would rule in favor of gun rights, and someone who would look favorably on evangelical Christian religious liberty claims. And that's something that's problematic because we don't normally think of justices having to pass tests. They're supposed to take the cases as they come, you know, with a certain ideology that's understandable. This is obviously going to be someone more conservative than not, but someone who will not guarantee a vote in a particular way. And I think while Judge Gorsuch tried to distance himself from that at his hearing, that's undeniably the context in which his nomination arose.
And again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Wydra, who is the president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank law firm and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. Well, in terms of Justice Gorsuch getting to where he is, it was obviously very important that he got on that list of 21 names that basically Trump himself was given, and it was put together by the Federalist Society, and he wasn't on the first list, but on the second list. I spoke recently with the lawyer for the so-called frozen trucker who had a terrible choice. Either you freeze to death or you go and seek shelter, and as a consequence, you lose your job. Six of the seven judges that looked at that case ruled in the trucker's favor, but Neil Gorsuch ruled for the corporation. The lawyer for the frozen trucker argued that Neil Gorsuch was, in fact, auditioning for the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation to get on that list with that vote. I don't know how that can be proven one way or the other, but what is the story with the fact that Gorsuch was first approached by the Federalist Society about the list, not by Trump himself?
You know, he is very much an establishment, deeply rooted conservative lawyer and then jurist. He was involved in, you know, Washington conservative circles. So, you know, there was, I think, a lot of effort to portray him as sort of this, you know, Westerner outside the Washington elite. He very much is of the conservative elite. And I think that's exactly why you had people like the Federalist Society and Heritage Foundation putting forth his name. There are a lot of things about his record that check important boxes for very, very, very conservative Republicans and very conservative libertarians. He has been very focused on protecting religious claims over the rights of third parties. The most important example of that is when he sided with the religious organizations that were preventing women employees from accessing contraception coverage to which they are entitled under the Affordable Care Act. He would have gone even further than the Supreme Court eventually did in their particular case. That's the Hobby Lobby case and then the later Little Sisters of the Poor case, which are incredibly important. Also, he has, as you noted, with the frozen trucker case, which, you know, that is a, I think you talked about the real choice that this man was put to in terms of, does he operate his vehicle in an unsafe manner? That is, does he either stay with it and potentially freeze to death, or does he drive it in a way that's unsafe? Which he, you know, it was a difficult position that he was put in. And Judge Gorsuch, when he was on the bench, bent the law in a way that I think was not an accurate reading of the text of the statute in order to find for the employer. And that's the thing that is problematic when you look at his record and the reason that my organization, Constitutional Accountability Center, ultimately opposed his nomination, because it seemed as if he was reading the law in a way that would bend it to rule for corporations in cases instead of, you know, the average American worker. And you want a justice who is going to apply the law impartially and fairly for all and not be beholden to particular corporate interests, other special interests, or putting forth a political agenda of his own or that of the president who nominated him. So certainly, I hope I'm wrong about that. You know, I'd love for him to get on the bench, and as someone who litigates in front of the Supreme Court, I will be making my best arguments to him, and I certainly hope he will follow the law where it leads, including when it leads to progressive outcomes. But there is a lot to be concerned about from his record, and very much from the way in which his name was put on the list and the people who were putting together that list, and the fact that Donald Trump is the president who chose him. This is one of the most authoritarian, anti-constitutional presidents we've ever seen. I don't know if we've ever seen quite his like. And so the fact that Donald Trump chose him, that he could be Trump's justice, is something that we should all be keeping an eye on and, frankly, be very concerned about.
Well, is it therefore an irony then, Elizabeth Wydra, that in the Rose Garden ceremony today, Justice Anthony Kennedy is swearing in Gorsuch? This was the second oath that he took to impartially interpret the law, quoting the oath, and do equal right to the poor and to the rich?
Look, I hope that he very much makes good on that oath. I hope that he gets to the bench and surprises many of us who are skeptical by being someone who does follow the Constitution and the law where it leads. But, you know, the burden is on him, frankly, especially after the way that we saw Donald Trump repeatedly criticize judges who ruled in ways that he didn't like. You know, we saw that after the judges on the lower courts rightfully blocked Trump's unconstitutional Muslim ban, the travel refugee ban. We've seen that in the Trump University cases where Trump's vision of an ideal judge seems to be a judge that rules in Trump's favor. So the burden is on Justice Gorsuch to show that he is going to be that independent, impartial justice, which he pledged to be. And I certainly hope he is. Those are certainly the right things to say. And the proof will be in the pudding when he actually starts issuing decisions from the Supreme Court bench.
Well, just to follow up on the extent to which Judge Gorsuch may have auditioned for the Federal Society and the Heritage Foundation in getting on the list to be picked for the Supreme Court. During his confirmation, Gorsuch said that he was first contacted about his candidacy for the Supreme Court, not by the White House, but by Leonard Leo, who's a high-ranking Federalist Society official. Let's then, if we can, just in the last few minutes, Elizabeth Wydra, go through some of the cases that Gorsuch will be ruling on. Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia versus Comer, a Missouri church denied state funding for a playground in a case concerning separation of church and state. Do you think that's a significant one?
Yes, that case has been delayed in its scheduling by the court. They could have easily heard it before Judge Gorsuch became Justice Gorsuch, but clearly they thought that there was a likelihood that they might split 4-4, and therefore there is every indication that Justice Gorsuch's vote could be the deciding vote in that case. And that case is about a state constitutional provision that put some distance between church and state when it comes to funding. So this is a real test of how Justice Gorsuch will work to break down that church-state wall. There are also really important cases that are in the process of being considered by the Supreme Court, what we call petitions for certiorari. That's whether the Supreme Court is going to take them up in the first place. And there are important cases involving gun rights. There's a case out of California about the supposed right to have a handgun outside the home and Second Amendment issues there. There are also important cases about voting rights. There's an appeal from a North Carolina decision that talked about how the North Carolina legislature used surgical precision, those were the words of the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, in targeting the rights of people of color to vote in that state. That's an incredibly important issue coming up. And there's also another religious liberty case that's on the doorstep of the Supreme Court, a cake baker who refused, based on purported religious objections, to bake a cake for a gay couple who was getting married. So there are these important fundamental rights issues that Justice Gorsuch will be weighing in on in the next few weeks and months. So we won't have to wait long to really see how he is going to cast his votes in these crucial cases. We might have have to wait a little bit longer to see whether he will make good on Donald Trump's promise to put someone on the bench who will overturn Roe versus Wade, but we won't have to wait very long to see Justice Gorsuch's impact.
And just to quickly go through these cases, Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. That's a Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. Peralta versus San Diego. Does the Second Amendment grant California gun owners the right to carry a concealed weapon in public places? North Carolina versus North Carolina NAACP. North Carolina voting overhaul that's said to target African Americans with almost surgical precision. And then there's another case which I'd like you to comment on. That's Hernandez versus Mesa. That's the case of a 15-year-old Mexican who was on the Mexican side of the border when he was shot dead in 2010 by a U.S. Border Patrol agent. Surely that one will be watched closely because of Donald Trump's wall and, in general, his support for the Border Patrol and for getting tough on the border.
Yes, that case is very important generally, but also I think, as you correctly noted, as Donald Trump encourages more deportation forces to really be rather rough with their enforcement activities and expanding his idea of who really should be targeted for removal from this country, even people who are contributing to communities in important ways here in the United States. That case has already been argued, but if it looks like there could be a 4-4 split, then they could set that case for re-argument with Justice Gorsuch participating so he could be the tie-breaking vote. So we'll just have to see in that one whether it'll be one that they decide without Justice Gorsuch or whether they re-argue it and have him to weigh in on that case.
Well, Elizabeth Wydra, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
My pleasure to be with you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. And again, I've been speaking with Elizabeth Wydra, who's the president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a think tank law firm and action center dedicated to showing how the text and history of the Constitution supports progressive outcomes. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. We're going to take a brief station break, back looking into a lawsuit asking for the visitors' logs to the White House, Trump Tower, and Mar-a-Lago be made public again.